Mr. Smith, good morning to you.
May it please the court, I am James D. Smith, Assistant Attorney General. I appear on behalf of the appellant state officials. My oral argument will attempt to focus on two issues. First one is that summary judgment should be reversed because there was a material dispute of facts concerning the planning and pleading and complaint relief filed by the plaintiffs. And the second issue would be that the remedy on remand should be dismissal for lack of jurisdiction because the plaintiffs have no jurisdictional standing. The lawsuit is filed as a facial federal 1983 civil rights action seeking only the prospective relief of an injunction by a complaint that alleges that DHHS has committed constitutional violations of substantive due process and equal protection by a written department policy memo that denies foster parent licenses and placement to people who profess to be gay or lesbian. The complaint, and as stated by the district judge, alleged a facial challenge to a department written policy memo. The memo was issued over 20 years ago by the prior director of a predecessor agency that's no longer in existence. The current HHS agency heads testified that the memo, in fact, is not the policy of HHS and had not been the policy for at least 1 year prior to the filing of the lawsuit. The current HHS agency heads also testified that all gay, lesbian people who have applied for foster parent licenses have been granted licenses. At a minimum, those facts are a material dispute of fact that prevented the district court from granting summary judgment, for which that alone the district court should be reversed. On the second issue of no standing and jurisdiction, my argument that the court should reverse with directions to dismiss, there are two recent cases not cited in my brief that I think the court should be aware of. One's a United States Supreme Court brief, or case, another is an Eighth Circuit case. The U.S. Supreme Court case is Spokio v. Robbins, 136 Supreme Court 1540, 2016 case on standing. And the Eighth Circuit case is Braitberg, B-R-A-I-T-B-E-R-G, v. Charter Communications Incorporated. It's 836 F-3rd, 925. An Eighth Circuit case in 2016. Those cases as Braitberg specifically talks about Spokio, that jurisdictional standing requires a concrete injury that must, quote, actually exist, end of quote, and must be, quote, real, not abstract. And the Braitberg case reversed the prior Eighth Circuit precedent because of applying Spokio.
What would actually factually happen have to happen in this case, according to your theory, for the court to have jurisdiction?
Standing can't just be based on conjecture. There must be an actual injury, and it requires prospective injunctive relief to remedy the injury, neither of which the plaintiffs established or alleged. None of the plaintiffs ever applied for a foster care license. None were ever denied a license. They alleged in their complaint that they would have applied but for this policy. They do have an adequate remedy at law, and that's simply to do what anyone else would do, is apply and file an application for a license. And as the record shows, all gay lesbians who have applied for the foster parent licenses have been granted a license. So they have an adequate remedy under the administrative procedure law, so there is no reason for granting an injunction when they do have an adequate remedy of law. Under the Braitberg and Spokio case, You cannot simply get standing by alleging a bare procedural violation divorced from any concrete harm. You have to satisfy the injury in fact requirement for standing. If not, there's no judicial jurisdiction, and there is no jurisdiction in this case, and it should be dismissed. As an aside, the plaintiff's complaint relied on the memo. They tried to shift gears during the case and come up with something they called the Bristow procedure, which is simply a procedure, a procedural violation. They never alleged that in the complaint anyhow, so it can't be grounds for summary judgment. It doesn't solve their jurisdiction problem either.
Mr. Smith, the 1983 action is the assertion of a federal statutory claim in a state forum. Your jurisdictional argument is premised upon a decision that applies the federal case or controversy Article 3 requirement. Does that apply to Nebraska law?
My recollection is Nebraska case law says for federal 1983 cases that Nebraska courts, this court, is bound by the federal precedent. So the answer to the question would be yes, the federal precedent would be binding on Nebraska courts.
In terms of the jurisdiction, and I understand the substantive law of 1983 actions that would be binding on the Nebraska courts, but we are talking about a state court and, of course, a district court that is a court of general jurisdiction.
But I don't see any reason that it could be distinguished, because it still comes down to basic judicial jurisdiction to adjudicate a federal 1983 action. There is no jurisdiction, federal court, for such an action. I don't know how there could possibly distinguish that Nebraska law would be different.
Do you think there's any difference between our standing requirement, the standing jurisprudence that we have under Nebraska law, compared to the federal case or controversy?
I don't think so. That's my view. There, specifically, as far as the actual evidence that was presented, there was no evidence that the memo alleged in the complaint will be enforced against the plaintiffs. No injury.
Was there any evidence about what is enforced?
What the evidence, as I recall, is that the standard is placement is what is in the best interest of the child. That's the policy. And that would vary under the various circumstances of who the child is and the situation and the placement. But that is the standard. It is not the standard that simply because you are gay or lesbian, that's just a disqualifier.
How would a person learn of that?
By applying for a license. And I'm into my rebuttal time, and if I could, I will save the rest of my time.
Before you sit down, counsel, what's the significance of the information in our record that suggests that the state was given an opportunity on the record during a hearing to rescind the administrative memo and declined? What, if any, significance does that have to our analysis?
To me, it has no significance, because when the policy is that memo is not the policy, I know of no constitutional requirement that says when the policy is as stated by the executive heads that there is a requirement to satisfy the Constitution that an outdated memo that shouldn't have been on a website has to be rescinded.
Are there still different levels of review for same-sex couples as opposed to married couples of opposite sexes as far as approval of the foster care?
The record says what the record says.
You concede that there are five levels of review for homosexuals and gays and lesbians as opposed to four levels of review for other
applicants. The problem
applicants.
With that entire argument, Your Honor, is they're talking about a procedure that is not what they alleged in the They alleged that they should get summary judgment based on the allegations of the complaint, which is the MO. That procedure argument is a red herring. If they wanted to rely upon that, they should have alleged in the complaint that they did not do so. We challenged that, and I think if you look at Exhibit 61, or I think it's Exhibit 61, or Exhibit 61, page 4, says defendants have asserted numerous times the plaintiff's challenge of the Bristow procedure not properly before the court. They created that because their complaint was dead in the water, so they tried to create some procedure that, frankly, they never did.
Thank you very much. Is it Mr. Beeney?
Yes, Mr. Chief Justice.
Good morning to you.
Mr. Chief Justice, may I please the court, Garrett Beeney on behalf of Appalese. Your Honors, in light of the conversation this morning, I'd like to address the two issues that the state has raised. First, with respect to whether there is a material fact in dispute, and second, with respect to the standing issue. As to the material facts, first of all, we have little disagreement with the facts that were presented to Your Honors this morning, with two minor exceptions. First, two of the plaintiffs did actually apply and were told that they were categorically banned from applying to receive a license to foster, which is a prerequisite to adopting in the state of Nebraska. And second of all...
Counsel, in the record, we should be able to find an application from them?
There is, in the pleadings, the allegation that was never contested by the state, and there was a letter from the state responding to the applicant saying that they were categorically banned from applying. There's also evidence in the record as to two others who phoned the department and were told again that because of their sexual orientation they were banned from applying, and a letter from my co-counsel at the ACLU citing that fact, and that's all in the record.
You're claiming that's not disputed?
I don't believe it's disputed. Okay. It's never been disputed. And the second fact that was recited by the state was that the complaint doesn't allege discriminatory treatment with respect to the policy that the state claims is in place now. Of course, we didn't know about the policy. Indeed, many employees at DHHS didn't know about the policy. But the complaint is broad enough certainly to encompass any discriminatory treatment. And I would refer Your Honors to paragraphs 109 and 117 of the complaint, and also our request for relief, which is to strike down any discriminatory treatment. But the real problem with
the facts... Let me back up a little and ask you the same question. What does the record show with respect to the policy in place now, and how would one learn of it?
That's exactly where I was going, Your Honor. The recitation of facts as given to this court is woefully incomplete. Indeed, the only brief filed by the state doesn't even address the policy that the state says is in place. And if I may start with 195 as to, again, the uncontested facts. It's a categorical ban. The state told Judge Colburn it's not defending the policy as constitutional. It has never been repealed, as would be normal for DHHS if it's not following such a memorandum policy. It is the only active written policy at DHHS now. It is the, as Your Honors mentioned, the district court gave the state numerous opportunities to say that it would withdraw the policy. It refused to do so.
Yep. Aren't there affidavits of the executive heads of DHHS saying the policy was, in fact, not in effect for at least a year before?
They say they have not followed it, but I would caution against using in effect, Your Honor, because it is in effect. It is a memo that years after we were told that it wasn't followed, it was in the training materials for DHHS employees. A year after we're told it was not followed, it was on the website discouraging gay and lesbian applicants from applying.
That, I think, might be persuasive evidence for a trier of fact, but this is here on summary judgment. And we look at this in the light most favorable to the non-moving party, which is not you. So Looking at it in that way, how do you deal with the affidavits that were presented?
We're not contesting that the state, at least the current head of DHHS, has elected not to follow active policy. That's not in dispute, nor is it in dispute that this memorandum 195 remains the policy. None of these facts that I've recited to the court are in dispute.
Excuse me, how are we using the word policy?
The 195. I distinguish 195 as policy and the current practice as practice because...
Okay, practice is not policy. Is that your position?
And the reason I make that distinction, Your Honor, is because the current DHS director could decide this policy that I have only informed a couple of my lieutenants about, I decide to abandon today. I'm going back to 195. Or the next director could say, I'm not going to follow my predecessor's policy. I'm going back to 195, which remains the current policy. Now
this is
not
a regulation, is it? This has not been adopted as a regulation.
It's a policy memorandum.
Just a policy memorandum.
Correct. Which is
binding. Did they say in 2012 they weren't using it any longer?
The head of DHHS says that he doesn't follow it.
As of 2012?
As of 2012, yes, Your Honor.
And in 2015 they removed it from the website. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Okay.
And then later...
And in 2012 forward, have there been same-sex couples that have applied for foster care placement and been approved?
There have been, but the state can't tell us because of the way they apply the policy, which I'd like to address in a moment.
Have any been denied?
That's what they can't tell us. They've told us in discovery. Because they don't keep records based on sexual orientation.
Wasn't there something from the director said he had not denied any applicants?
That assumes, though, that... And then maybe we can move to the policy. The policy, as the court pointed out earlier, imposes on gay and lesbian applicants a five-step review process. Heterosexual applicants are subject to a two-step review process. Convicted felons are subject to a four-step review process. It is only gay and lesbian applicants that are subject to this five-step review process. Now, under Heckler and other cases we cite, that unequal treatment is the injury, the redressable injury in and of itself. And to directly answer your question, Your Honor, the director does
so
not
you would,
receive...
So you would argue that that grants standing then to the parties because they have had an injury that has occurred.
It does grant standing because as Northeast Florida General Associated Contractors, Heckler, and other cases all establish that the unequal treatment is a different injury from the denial of the benefit. And here there's no doubt that there's unequal treatment. There's no dispute about it.
So there is an injury that would create standing.
Absolutely, Your Honor, under those cases and others that we cite in our brief. But as to whether we know whether... gay and lesbian applicants have been denied, the process that the state employs is not that there is a five-step review process if a gay or lesbian applicant has been denied. Once a gay or lesbian applicant is denied at the first level, there's no further review. At the second level, there's no further review. It's only if that gay and lesbian applicant is approved that it goes to the second and the third and the fourth and the fifth. And as I mentioned, even convicted felons get their application stopped at the fourth level. And that establishes injury in fact under the current policy. And again, none of these facts are in dispute. And going back to the issue of the policy, the 195 that the state refused to withdraw, notwithstanding the invitation of the district court to withdraw the policy and avoid an adjudication, there was again uncontested evidence of rampant confusion among DHS employees and its contractors. There's uncontested emails. Do we follow 195? Yes, we do follow 195. And this is at a time when the director has said he told his lieutenants that we have a policy that's different from 195. There was no, and again, uncontested fact, there was no general dissemination to the employees of DHHS that we no longer follow 195.
So this... Package that confusion into a legal argument. The significance of the confusion is...
That 195 continues to be imposed on gay and lesbian applicants even after the executive director says that's no longer his policy.
Is there any evidence of that?
There is, Your Honors. Exhibits 29, 30, 32 to 34, 36, 38, and 42. Okay. Those are all exhibits in the record, and they are dealt with on a couple of pages, our brief, and a couple of pages. So there is no dispute about the facts. The facts, as I've related to Your Honors, are all uncontested facts. There is discrimination in the process. That is a separate, cognizable, redressable injury under a longstanding history of Supreme Court precedent. In the Heckler case, for example, male was trying to get Social Security benefits of a deceased wife, was prevented from doing so as a result of some additional showings that males had to make rather than females about dependency. And the court clearly stated that it was not the fact that the applicant could not obtain the benefit that was the injury, it was the disparate treatment. The same in Northeast Florida General Contractors. The question there was a set-aside for minority businesses. There was no need to show that the plaintiffs were not able to obtain additional contracts. If I may just finish, Mr. Chief Justice.
You may.
The injury was that they were treated disparately than others. And here, the state has offered no justification for any disparate treatment. We have no dispute. There is no reason to treat heterosexual couples and differently from gay and lesbian couples. The state doesn't contest the longstanding science that the children of gay and lesbians under an enormous array of criteria have the same outcomes as heterosexual couples. There's no state interest offered at all for the discriminatory treatment.
What do you read as appellants seeking from this court and why? They want it to go back and do what?
Well, as I just heard, it seems like they want to go back with an order that there's no standing, but I think clearly there is standing. But to go back to the district court for a further evidentiary hearing would be nothing but wasteful. I think if one goes through the state's initial brief, there are no contested facts there. We're not contesting
when
anything.
Both parties move for a summary judgment, are they conceding that there are no, both parties conceding there are no material issues of fact in dispute?
I think in fairness, the way I would answer that, Your Honor, is that certainly it means that as to the facts that they believe are germane to their motion, they believe that there are no contested genuine issues of dispute. But in this, and I would not necessarily always translate into summary judgment being appropriate for an opponent, but here we are relying on the same facts. And none of these facts, none of them recited in the district court are subject to any evidence that there was any dispute. We know what 195 is. We know what they've done with 195. We know the policy is that they report to follow. They don't contest that there's five steps of review, whereas heterosexuals are subject to two steps. They concede that. And that is injury that's recognizable, cognizable, under the Equal Protection Clause of the Due Process Clause. Thank you very much, Your Honors.
Thank you very much. Do we have time for rebuttal? There is no time for rebuttal.